Welcome back to Grammerica Outlawed Roundup, guys, for coming at you February 12th, 2025. I said it like a black guy. 12th. With Fent Fumbles and the Secret Whisperer, which I don't know what to expect with that. I mean, Fent Fumbles probably somewhat self-explanatory, I would say.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what does that mean? What do you mean, Fent Fumbles? Like they're fumbling the fentanyl or the government's fumbling the whole thing?
Turns out we might have been fumbling the fentanyl for a while.
I mean, they chose a new czar, so.
Yeah, well, it's going to get interesting because the czar might find a lot of fentanyl right away, and then we're going to look like real blowjobs. And then, so I got some cool stuff.
As if the czar is going to even, come on. As if it's going to go public with any of that stuff. They'll be very choosy. They won't say anything publicly.
Oh, I think it's going to go public. I think that, you know what I was, you know, we're getting mockingbirded right now. This is like with CIA tentacles all over it. Never mind the CSIS and the Canadian government media, you know, if they want to torch this bitch, they'll just torch it on their own. They've been doing it for 150 years with mixed success.
Well, what do you mean? What are you trying to say here? What, like in what way? U.S. or Canada or what?
The U.S., the military industrial complex, if you will. Anyway, the fentanyl stuff that's coming out is crazy. I mean, we always knew it was pretty bad, but now that it's like mainstream, it's pretty bad. And then did you hear about the Worcester City Council voted to become a transgender sanctuary city?
Yeah.
Do you have the clip?
No.
I have the clip. Have you heard the clip?
No, I haven't. I couldn't believe. I didn't want to dig into that. I just didn't want to go there. So.
Oh man. It's the best.
I did see some of it. I saw some of it. But.
Well, we're talking about it. Why don't we just start with that?
Oh boy. All right. Let's do it.
It is from N Wokeness on the Twitter.
Oh no.
This is really.
Hang on. Is this from Canada? Is this Canada's?
This is not Canada.
Canada. I thought it was Canadian.
Some non-Canadian. I do have everything else is Canada. This is not Canada, so might as well just get it out of the way first, you know?
Okay, all right.
So this is, I mean, I've watched it. I was laughing so hard. I was like, I can't not play this on the show. The audience deserves this.
City to protect me because the federal government won't. And if you think you're afraid of Trump, you should see how afraid of Trump I am.
Can you wrap up, please?
Yes.
No, hang on a sec. I just want to know how are they not protected by the federal government?
I don't know. I think they just can't put it on their passport.
Are they humans or they can't, because they can't put it.
You can't put it on your passport.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It might be a little more than that. I mean, they're talking about taking the T right off of the L and the G and the B.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I understand kind of where they're coming from, I guess, but I just don't think it's you can be whoever you want to be, I think, right? It's just that.
So Worcester is going to be T-Town, baby.
And that's why you don't want the city to be a safe space for trans people. You better prepare for trans people to make this a very unsafe space.
I'm shaking right now. I don't want to be here. I'm sorry. Am I taking too long?
You know, this reminds me of who's that comedian that, you know, rub a dub dub. You know who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, yeah.
Back to
Andrew Dice Clay?
Andrew Dice Clay. This broad reminds me of Andrew Dice Clay. She's like Andrea Dice Clay. I don't know how she identifies, but.
Pleading for my life.
You remembered how many children I have and how many, and that two of them are trans.
What are the odds of that, I think?
Speak as both the B and the T in the LGBT.
I'm multiply dis.
Isn't a B just a G? It can't be a little bit gay. It's like being a little bit pregnant.
No. He said B and T, right?
Yeah, so, B is guy. I don't think guy.
Well, he could be B, G, and T then. Yeah, he's got a. I mean, he's got like all the ones.
Being a little bit pregnant. Maybe we should do a tour of tranny.
I feel sorry for this girl because she's got like what Maria has, EDS, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and
How do you know?
A whole bunch of other stuff. I did hear this part of the clip. Yeah. Like, I feel bad for her. She's just got her victim status out there for everybody to know. Play it.
She's wearing a pearl necklace.
Disabled. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder that causes me immense physical pain. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I have narcolepsy, and I couldn't drive myself here. So I had to hide from my driver that I was in drag, which is not an easy thing to do in drag.
I do not want to be here. It's my day off. I do not want to be in your DMs. I do not want to be in your email inboxes. I do not want my
How do you like the sparkle beard?
Creativity writing diss tracks like Kendrick. I don't want to spend an hour applying glitter on my face so that you will hear and see me. I want you to listen to me.
Let us remember that the Nazis burned the books that the Nazis burned books on gender sciences first. Now the administration has villainized and marginalized migrant workers, trans, LGBT people, and even special needs, denying life-saving and affirming care.
Can you look at me and tell me how many of my friends need to die before you do anything?
Please wrap
look
up.
At me.
I feel bad for them.
I don't. These bastards been running rim shot for fucking.
No, I know, years. But they just now they're just. Getting, it's just so.
Well done. Come on.
Of course, we need to continue celebrating Black History Month because, in spite.
Do we?
Of what's coming down from Washington, we all know that we all exist and we all need to be recognized for our existence.
But be aware.
I mean, I just don't get it. We do. Like, what is really happening? How come there are more lives in danger now because of the kids trans? Like, I thought the only real change was the kids transing.
You can't trans the kids anymore.
Well,
you are a guest in my house. When you come, and when you come, know that there are strong queer and trans people in my classroom who will collect you with the quickness.
My name in drag is Dee Dee Delight. And my name out of drag is Dewey Cosgrove Atienza.
Laddie LaRouge, he, they, in drag, District 3.
My legal name is Olivia D'Ambrosio. My public name is Livy Scanlon. My wife and I own a home in the Canal District.
I speak as someone who is always misgendered, like, all the time.
No
people
shit.
People refer to me as sir when I prefer to be referred to as ma'am. I speak as someone who is afraid to use public toilets. I speak as someone who is a member of this community and is a queer person.
You have
a Q, right. So he's a B and a Q and a T.
Yeah, I guess he's almost got them all. I mean,
he's like a full house.
If he was Canadian, he could add two spirit to it too, then he'd be there. I mean, he could be everything.
No. You gotta be
Can he be a lesbian too? If he's identifying as a woman, I guess he could be that too, right?
Whoops, I posted the link in the wrong spot. You gotta be an Indian to be a two-spirit.
Can I just identify as one? He's probably got some blood in there.
Doesn't work like, but he's got, I don't know. He looks pretty, he's in the States.
I still don't understand what the they and the he is, like he, they, and she, they. I don't really understand that.
Nobody knows. That's the thing. That's how they get you. So anyway, what do you want to go to next?
I don't know. You've
you've left you speechless.
Yeah.
I mean, I figured you had already seen it already.
Well, I did see portions of it. Yeah. Yeah. Now that you mention it, but I just didn't want to stay there for very long. I feel bad that the war is escalating against them. You know.
I get it. So let me. Can you hear this if I press play?
One of the things that we have pointed to a lot over the past couple of weeks when.
So I do have a few things to follow this up with, sort of.
Responding to the president is the amount of fentanyl that crosses from Canada to the U.S., which is, as you know, very small. It was 43 pounds was seized at that border. But I understand you think that is not sort of something that we should be focusing on, the fact that it's a small amount, particularly compared to Mexico. Give me your thoughts.
Well, you, several months ago, you had the biggest lab in the history of the world. Taken over by the Royal Canadian Mountain Police in Vancouver. I mean, we'd never even seen anything like this. It made Breaking Bad look like
taken over. I mean, do they really have to say taking over? Like, can't they say dismantling or something? I mean,
busted up, raided.
Okay, so that, you know, and definitely where there was Chinese organized crime, possibly Iran as well. The facts have not been released by your government. It's sort of astonishing that they haven't provided more information publicly. But I think they know they're sitting on a big scandal here. The fact that this thing emerged and it's tied into these biker gangs who've been hired to go down to the United States in some cases and assassinate people like, you know, my former boss, Secretary Mike Pompeo, President Trump and others, is, you know, this is another whole level of scandal involving it. But the key thing to focus on is that there, you know, someone was making over 100 million doses of deadly fentanyl in a lab that you didn't know about. Right under your nose. Now, how many other labs do you think you have going? And, you know, let me focus one last thing.
So just for some context, that guy that's talking is an American, and they're the ones who found the lab. And, you know, I think they had to tell us about it.
Oh, wow. And you know what's weird is that this 1%, like I've had friends of mine say to me, well, it's only 1% of, like, that really is like almost like a headline. They made it look like, okay, they roll that out to make everybody think that it's not a big deal in Canada. Meanwhile, I also heard a clip from, I think it was Sam Cooper in there saying that, and somebody else, where they know that some of these kingpins are funneling money to the politicians, or at least funding some of their, like, you know, maybe even legally. I don't know if it's illegal or legally, but they're connected to the politicians.
You want to listen to more?
Sure.
There's very little border enforcement. So we don't, 42 kilograms, it's a nonsensical number. We don't have most of the drugs are going from Mexico to Canada and then being brought south into the Northwest United States on ships. You have almost no port enforcement with police. So we have no idea, except from our sources, what's going on. And we hear some bad things.
I will say, I mean, they did find the super lab. I mean, I take your point. It was under their nose, but there was police work done in order to find it, uncover it, and charge the people responsible. So that is a positive piece. I take your point, though, that there could be more. And so tell me what more you think needs to be done to deal with some of the things you're talking about, as well as the czar.
Did you notice her eyebrows aren't on straight?
No, I'm not looking at her.
They're not on straight. One's, she fucked him up. That means too bad. Why wouldn't somebody tell her?
They're not even close.
Surveillance at the border. They are going to crack down on Mexican cartels. I talked to the RCMP commissioner about that. And there is more shared intelligence that's going to happen between Canada and the U.S. What else would be helpful in this instance then?
Let me first stress the RCMP is an excellent organization. Okay, you've got very good police in your country. Yeah. Okay, you got a great CSIS, your intelligence organization, is first rate as well. Your problem is your laws. Mm. It's the Stinchcomb law, which I'm not, you know, like the world's expert on, but basically every time we try to go up on a phone number in Canada, almost all the money laundering networks tied to China, which is about 90% of all money laundering in the United States, is tied to Canada. Okay, so when we try to go up on those numbers with your police, they have to inform the person that we're targeting that we're targeting their number. That's crazy. How can we run an undercover police operation with your country? Which is why we don't run them, which is why the seizure statistics are so low, because we don't even try to work with Canada.
Wow. Did you hear what he said there?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. But
you gotta tell someone if you're gonna wiretap them?
But I mean, I just got another couple spam calls today from people trying to steal money from me.
And they can't
deal with that, right? And they won't help the states out with this kind of stuff.
Your laws are abbreviated and distorted. And I think this is an issue that goes back in Canadian history a long time. You need to update your legal structures. And if you do, you know, and create a racketeering.
I can't take this broad seriously with her crooked eyebrows. It's too much.
Influence Corrupt Organizations Act.
Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Like we have in the United States, and designate them as terrorists, which you're going to do, I think we'll solve a lot of these problems. I think terrorists will come off, and we'll be in an excellent position to be partners to stop this stuff from terrorizing our country. I mean, our countries are getting killed by fentanyl. We got to protect ourselves.
So I just want to end on this. You just said if we do these things, the tariffs won't, well, they're not on, but they won't go on. I mean, do you believe that this is about fentanyl for the president, or that it's about other things? This is just one of the pieces that he is using as leverage here.
Well, I take him literally, and I think literally he says it's about fentanyl, and I think it is. I mean, we're losing, 80 to 100,000 people in North America between the U.S. and Canada. We got to stop this nonsense. We got to target these Mexican cartels. We need to focus on their money. So the key thing is to target the banks that are behind it. And of course, you've got a sort of tragic situation where TD Bank was laundering billions of dollars for Mexican cartels. And now it's being hit with one of the largest fines, literally, in the history of money laundering. So, it's not blame Canada for me. I love Canada. Canada's a great country. We need to work together. We've got our own problems with our banks laundering money, too, in the United States. So we got to break the bank on fentanyl trafficking for these cartels and bring them down. And take them out.
Isn't that a crazy statistic?
That was a great clip. Yeah, that was awesome. Can I interject with something into your segment?
Yeah.
Do you think that it's got anything to do with this? I've kind of been saving this a little bit, but this is from Lawyer Lisa's Substack. I kind of end up with a bunch of hers and just kind of waiting because I'm not too sure if I want to talk about them or not. But this one, Unite, pushing decriminalization of drugs and a list of politicians adhering to this decriminalization. So it is kind of interesting that this happened, I think it was 2020. Some globalist organization pushing digital health certificates, decriminalization of drugs, and support for the pandemic agreement. Explore your country and the list of politicians loyal to the globalists, the drug policy desk. So at a global level, this drug policy reform debate continues to broaden, and the number of countries experimenting with different approaches to drug control towards better public health outcomes, particularly with respect to cannabis, is on the increase. So it just has a little thing here talking about the policymakers, international experts, and key populations and governments. But she's got here, the drug policy desk within Unite's network is uniquely positioned to provide parliamentary engagement support and accompany legislators who have the will to promote reform and to energize national debates on drug policy, fostering exchanges between an increasingly diverse group of, it's all the wording, eh? Diverse group of parliamentarians and a wide range of stakeholders, creating a dynamic platform of debate. That sounds like it's AI written there. An initiative in the drug policy sphere. So anyways, what it does is it introduces these networked members to evidence-based approaches on drug policies. But I don't trust any of this, right? Building the capacities of members on thematic issue areas, providing technical and, so here we go, parliamentary engagement support. So what are they going to write, legislative changes and stuff? The desk priorities are to provide alternatives to incarceration, which is, I mean, this is what's happening in Canada, right? You saw that guy get out with on bail.
And there after was a year, one, I think, right? One yeah, year.
Another one that just happened too, where I couldn't believe the amount of, what he should have got, and decriminalization of drug use, regulatory frameworks for medical and recreation use of cannabis. Yeah. And sustainable financing of harm reduction services. So they're talking about it right here. Sustainable financing of harm reduction. So I don't trust any of this. And then I think it's been, so between, here's the politicians that are in the midst of this. See if any of these sort of ring. They're kind of involved with the World Health Summit and European Harm Reduction Conference, which harm reduction, honestly, is just not working. It's just not working right now. I mean, I know there's a whole bunch of people that still argue for it, but I just don't see it working. But here's
working in Alberta.
What?
Working in Alberta.
Well, they're getting rid of it in Alberta.
Well, it's kind of a mix with a lot of heavy policing.
Yeah. So here's the Canadian ones.
And I think like forced rehab, basically, right? Is that the gist of it?
So, do you notice any of these when we've been talking recently about all this stuff? No? Okay.
They're all so unremarkable. It's hard to remember their names.
Yeah. They quote some of Harari's stuff in here.
Harari's a blowjob.
Yeah. There we go.
All right. I'm going to jump back over and see, because I think this is kind of what you're talking about. So let's break down this clip. This is from the Daniela Camboni show.
Oh, this is the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
Daniela, I'm hearing from current and former high-level police officers that say, despite what the Globe and Mail or Daniel Dale at CNN are reporting about, 40 kilograms is it. No, Canadians have no idea the level of criminal money laundering running through our cities that's connected to this. So that's the issue. I just want to add before we look, where do we go from here? What Mark is saying about a hurricane, that hurricane is going to hit us with 25% or more if we don't put a real fentanyl czar in place. That is someone with credibility that the U.S. government, look, they're not going to be fooled if you put a Justin Trudeau office lackey in that position. They need someone that can assure the American government that the RCMP will work with the DEA. If they want to put a wiretap on a triad boss or a cartel boss in Vancouver and Toronto, because it didn't happen before. The last point is, look, this U.S.-Canada strike force on organized crime, I believe the American government is going to want to see legal memorandums of understanding signed with Ottawa saying this isn't just pretty language to put off a tariff. This is some sort of joint laws between Canada and the United States where we will have, you working with the fentanyl czar. If the FBI and DEA want to come up to Vancouver and bust one of these triad command control money laundering nodes, which, by the way, I'm afraid, I'll say it, some of these bosses are connected to funding of the Trudeau liberals. I'll just drop that because it's true. And I believe the Trump administration knows it. So we're now, in the Germany-Greece European Union relationship, Canada and United States are there. They're not trusting our word anymore. Mm-hmm. They need to see our homework.
You know what? That really made me think of how difficult it must be, right, when it comes to this kind of stuff, when the laws and the crime, the way we handle crime is so different between us and the states. And how can they follow up with some of these things and make the busts?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have anything on the czar himself?
I don't have anything on the czar himself. I do have another little bit here from our buddy Steve Pinwasi. I keep asking to come on the show, but I think I'm a bit much for him. And he's an Indian dude too, I think, or something. So that's probably not helping my chances.
Yeah,
I have a new chief in other news. Now I'm a new chief. I think his name is Leon, maybe. I just found out today. I texted the old chief, and he's like, "I'm not the chief anymore. You got to get a hold of Merle, Chief Merle."
Nice.
Anyway, folks in Canada, folks,
you'll be like, "Hey, Chief Merle, I'm the most censored Indian cowboy in Canada."
Oh, I just like to keep it vague. Folks in Canada keep explaining to me that we don't have USA-like crime. It's true. Here's a brief list of the USA crime that never happens in Canada. So in USA, their anti-money laundering and law enforcement budgets are soaring to deal with crime. In Canada, we're so confident that there's no laundering that politicians confidently slash the budget. The BC Liberal government shuts down RCMP unit after mobster bought stake in BC casino. Confidential report suggests BC Liberal government shut down RCMP unit despite warnings about Crown Corporation's ties to organized crime. 3, in USA, defunding the police is extremely controversial. In Canada, we don't hesitate. Ontario immediately cut its financial crimes unit. This is from the Star. The RCMP is shutting down its financial crimes unit in Ontario. Here's why former top Mounties say it's a mistake. As alarm over money laundering increases, specialist investigators in financial crime will be reassigned to national security and organized crime units. This is from the January 15th, 2020. In America, they struggle to find kingpin money launderers. In Canada, our police know exactly where they are. Name another country where its former head of domestic intelligence is friends with a transnational money laundering kingpin. So here they have a picture. This is from Global News. From Global News. So, alleged RCMP mole accused of selling secrets to kingpin money launderer. Blah blah blah. Five. In America, you struggle with intelligent leaks, and your unruly spies are always causing trouble and fleeing abroad to avoid life in jail. In Canada, our spies become model prisoners and get released within 5 years of committing treason. Jeffrey Dallal, I wonder if he's related to Kyle. In America, you struggle to prosecute money laundering cases and spend millions in the process. In Canada, we just keep some gift cards and jewelry seized and forget about the $220 million a year laundering allegation.
That's so BC, a crazy man.
BC reaches forfeiture agreement and alleged $220 million a year money laundering scheme. The province will keep more than $1.2 million in money, casino chips, gift cards, and how much of this do you think got just skimmed right off the top? And personal property, like what? His guns? His porno? His cars? Including jewelry, all of which was seized in 2015. Seven, in America, you have so many people convicted of human trafficking. In Canada, our courts are just filled with traffic tickets. Heck, we don't even make time for that kind of stuff. This is a Greater Toronto Area man as human trafficking charges tossed over chronic Toronto judge shortage for the second time this year.
I mean, it's unfathomable. It really is.
The case is the latest
priority over anything.
The case is the latest in a string of serious criminal matters to crumble in Toronto's Superior Court over delays one judge has described as an embarrassment to the administration of justice. Eight, in America, parents worry their kids will be killed at school. In Canada, parents worry their kids will either be murdered or commit a murder after school. So there's a bunch of stuff there. I mean, I don't think it really compares. I wonder how the numbers would actually compare. I think his point there is just, you know, we're not violence for you. Teen girls murder trial, blah, blah, blah. In America, I think the real problem is that America overprescribes a bunch of drugs. In Canada, in America, a culture of violence is prevalent, has led to excessive murder. In Canada, our murder rate is low. We're all too busy getting lost. Canada has a strangely high rate of missing persons.
It's not like there's a road called
Highway of Tears where women go missing. So, Vancouver Sun, why these women are building a database of 12,000 missing and murdered people in Canada, October 2023. Whoops. Okay, where are we? That's about the end of that thread. So
yeah, it's a good thread.
And Swanee always comes through. Anyway, I think we're already like halfway through the show almost, so we should probably switch gears on the fence.
Well, this is from him too. He's he says, fun fact, Attorney General's and Minister of Justice had his government vehicle stolen 3 times in 3 years.
It's my beat, bro.
Organized crime literally stole the state vehicle used to transport the person in charge of Canada's Justice Department 3 times. News comes as Ottawa convenes a national summit to discuss how to crack down on auto thefts. Come on. Are they going to deal with auto thefts now?
No.
That was such an easy one. All right, let's switch gears.
Okay, so I got some tariff stuff and some history of trade. Some nice solar panel study. Justin Trudeau getting upset.
Well, maybe I'll do my thing then about the secrets.
Yeah, why don't we get that out of the way and then we can sort of just go into free fall for the rest of the show. Yeah.
Did you hear about Rep Luna? Rep, what's her name again? Paulina Luna? Anna Paulina Luna?
Yeah, but I don't really know anything about her.
About the launching the government of the task force that's going to look up and get to the bottom of these secrets, the government secrets.
It's interesting that Kennedy and Tulsi both got confirmed, huh?
Oh, did they? Wow, that's awesome. Just picture this. 2013, we started. Yeah. What?
I was just singing a rap song.
We started our podcast in 2013. You know, we're talking about conspiracies and stuff, ancient mysteries and all this. This is the rep that is interested in ancient mysteries. But would you ever admit that, would you ever realize the government, I mean, hey, I'm not saying that the government investigating itself is going to do anything, or this task force is going to really get to the bottom of any secrets, but just that they're mentioning all this, like she's already mentioned, like that there was two guns involved in JFK. Like she's already spilling the beans on the stuff. And it reminds me of like Trump and Elon in Trump's in the White House, like answering questions openly to the press about, or what seems more open than any of our Canadian press, at least, like answering whatever questions about Doge and all this stuff. And some of the stuff they're finding is like unbelievable. It's hard to even fathom that they're not double checking any of the, you know, the payments going out of the Treasury Department and stuff like that. But I'm going to play just like a minute and a half of this.
Oh. Very quiet.
That's not working. Hang on a sec. I should have. I hope this is going to work.
Me too.
Because it might not work after my mixer was kind of on the fritz earlier. So let's see. Let's see here. Can you hear it?
It's worse.
You can't hear it. What's going on? What do you think it is?
It's, did you turn on the play the sound?
Yeah, I did. It's on there. Okay, let me try it. Let me try this instead here.
Chairman James, it is with profound honor that I have been entrusted by Speaker Mike Johnson and Chairman James Comer to lead the House Oversight Task Force on Declassification of Federal Secrets.
The Task Force of Declassification of Federal Secrets.
Together with the help of the White House, our intelligence allies, the Department of Defense, the Department of Justice, we will be conducting investigations into the following.
You ready?
The assassination of JFK, RFK, and Dr. Martin Luther King, unidentified aerial phenomena, also known as UAPs, and unidentified submerged objects, also known
as... Hey, wait, pause it.
Hey, yeah, what?
Side note, we know the guy who might be getting that job. I was emailing with him today.
Let's hope so. I mean, I think it's a panel type thing. It's not like it's not a position. I think it's a committee within the task force type
thing. It sounds like a job to me, doesn't it?
I don't know. Okay, here we go. And she mentioned USOs, which is really interesting that they would define it as UAPs and USOs.
The Epstein client list. The origin.
But yeah, he says to lead or play a role. So that could be lead a panel.
The Epstein client list, the origins of COVID.
And the 9/11 files.
And so it also seems to be tied to United States space strategy. So, I mean, it could get wild.
It could get very wild. I mean, not that even if this isn't. Even if it's not going to go anywhere, this has got to scare the shit out of the deep state in some ways, because they're like, oh my God, are they really like brazen enough to come out with all this stuff? Because we've been talking about this for over a decade now, a lot of this stuff. Not that we know the truth, but it's definitely not what they've been telling us.
It'd be pretty crazy if one of our contacts ends up in the U.S. government doing crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Now that RFK is in there and Joel Salatin, I think he's been tapped, you know, for some help on farming and food. And what's his name that was on our show after we met him on one of our trips with Randall? Matt Lohmeyer is in there, the Space Force. Right. So, I mean, it's interesting to see all this coming about.
Force will be a beacon of bipartisanship. On the Republican side, Representatives Burchett, Boebert, Burleson, Crane, Gill, and Mace will be joining me, although I'd like to note that I'm expanding this to the entire governing body and will be allowing certain members to wave on. Our first hearing is set for March. The date will be announced soon, and we've already initiated close to a dozen communications with various agencies, to include Pam Bondi at the Department of Justice and the Secretary of State. This will no longer be a task force that makes bold promises only to fade into irrelevance or send strongly worded letters. This will be a relentless pursuit of truth and transparency, and we will not stop until the American people have the answers they deserve. We will cut through the bureaucracy, challenge the stonewalling, and ensure that the American people finally get the truth that they have been denied for too long.
I mean, not that I trust it, but it sure fits with what's happening. I mean, you know, to just like, if you're going to go this far, just go all the way. Right?
You know, I mean, what I'm thinking is there's never been a better time to maybe get some CAC money. I mean, maybe we could get some government money to look for the lost civilizations.
Well, no, it's not. It's never the worst time. They're not going to just dole out.
No, they're still going to spend some money. They're just not spending money on the bullshit.
I think tops off. I
they're
mean,
what's going to happen is they're going to tear it all down and they're going to fucking repoint a bunch of that money into actual U.S. interests.
Oh, I see. So some are really going to go search for Atlantis in the Azores. We want some funding for that.
Yeah, exactly. We're fucking looking for Atlantis, baby.
I mean, a lot of our peers are just like, they're not happy with this at all. They think it's a big, you know.
If that shit happens, I don't blame them. I go back and forth, but either way, it's fun.
Oh, yeah. And
dude, if that ever happened, then we would just be shills. No one would ever take us. They'd find some weird backstory. Look, he's always been a shill. You can tell.
Yeah.
Weird.
They've been asking for this NGO money for a while. Look, they keep saying it. Maybe we should get some NGO money. And then we finally disappeared
the whole time.
Disappeared to the Azores.
Faggots. Yeah. All right. Are you done?
I just want enough money for property in the Azores. That's it. Just get me to an island and away from everything.
You know, I think we could probably pull that off.
Yeah.
Once you get there, I bet you could be there living and have it be way cheaper than here.
Yeah. No. Look out over the ocean every day. Do our podcasting. Read some books. Dude, I saw a beautiful moonrise today. Full moon, full snow moon in the prairies. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. A snow moon?
I went out there. Yeah, it's supposedly a snow moon, which kind of makes sense because it's still like it was minus 33 when I was looking at it.
I was pretty nice here today. It's supposed to be, we're very close to, like, by the end of my long-term forecast now, it's like plus 6 in rain. I can see the end. I can see the end, the light at the end of the tunnel. We've been very spoiled. It's only minus 12 here right now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's livable, you know? That's livable.
Yeah, yeah. Anything under minus 20 is okay. It's just hovering from 20 to 30 here. It makes it just a little bit too cold to be sort of comfortable just walking around. I mean, I went for a walk today, but you know.
All right, let's jump into this one next. I got
take a listen.
Whoops. Da da da. Let's jump into this. This is have you heard about this? That Justin Trudeau's hot mic thing. It might have been all just a setup.
It wouldn't surprise. Kind
of I figured right away, but it seems like the
I think
it's calling him out on that.
While President Trump fixes our southern border.
Is it echoing?
Yep.
Okay, I think I've caught, now at least I could catch it. You know, most of the time. Let's try this again. Okay, toggle that off there. And let's try this again.
Border, our neighbors to the north are really worried that the U.S. will annex Canada. Listen to what Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said in a hot mic moment.
Trump has it in mind that one of the easiest ways of doing that is absorbing our country. And I think this is a real thing in my conversation with him.
All right, well, it's...
That was Trudeau, for people who couldn't hear it, talking about Trump and it being a real thing, the 51st state and his conversations with Trump.
Seems like this has been bothering Trudeau for quite a while now, because here's what he said last month.
I started to suggest, well, maybe there could be a trade for Vermont or California for certain parts. He immediately decided that it was.
Where do you think that would be?
Where? What would be?
Vermont or California? What's he giving up?
Canada.
No. He's trading states for provinces. Is what he's doing.
Oh, Alberta, Saskatchewan, maybe.
Alberta, baby. Even they don't want us.
Not that funny anymore, and we moved on to a different conversation. So this isn't out of the blue that he's doing this.
Well, certainly not out of the blue, because in fact, Trump did double down on his efforts to annex Canada. Let's take a listen.
Is it a real thing?
Yeah, it is. I think Canada would be much better off being a 51st state because we lose $200 billion a year with Canada, and I'm not going to let that happen. It's too much. Why are we paying $200 billion a year essentially in subsidy to Canada? Now, if they're a 51st state, I don't mind doing it.
And this just took place today. That was Brett Baer's sit down with President Trump. That took place at 3 o'clock Eastern ahead of the big game today. Guy, we know that Trump's a believer in manifest destiny. He is quite the businessman. What is your take on, you know, the fact that he is now doubling down on his maybe attempts to annex Canada?
Yeah, I mean, respectfully, it's not a real thing. We're not going to annex a sovereign country. Canada is a proud country. It's an ally of ours. Now, if this is a very aggressive negotiating tool and threat sort of hanging over ongoing negotiations over the tariffs or what have you, maybe I probably wouldn't do it that way myself. But Trump has, of course, his own way of doing things. I have another theory here, by the way. I'm not sure that was an accidental hot mic moment from Justin Trudeau. I think Trudeau knows exactly what's happening, and he wants to pump the threat of an annexation of Canada because he believes that can help his party. They have been floundering in the polls. They've been down for a year and a half to the Conservatives by 20 points. But the idea that maybe scary Trump from the U.S. would try to overthrow Canadian sovereignty could be this political lifeline to the political left in Canada. And I think that's why he's going to hype this. There's a political advantage potentially there for the liberals up in Canada to use that threat.
It seems to be working, honestly.
Yeah, well, it would seem like if that's all real, then it's hard to say that Trump's not stoking it, you know?
I mean, you haven't seen these. Have you seen these polls? Like, they're just messed up, dude, how fast they've shifted. It's like, not that I believe him, but this guy's like, looks like Carney going to recharge the LPC, which is Liberal Party of Canada. I bet he calls an election in March. This is an interesting theory. He wins and then aggressively goes after oil and gas and introduces a hidden carbon tax. Tries to go head to head with Trump and we get pummeled. Canada goes to 60 cents. Scary times ahead. I mean, this poll is actually one of the more favorable ones for... Oh, no, it's not. Sorry. No, it is. There's other polls that look way worse than this. But I mean, that's kind of my theory is there is a shift happening, but they're making it look way worse than it really is. And then this just came out today from Marty up north.
Marty. I can't hear it.
At all?
No, nothing.
Okay. Let me try this again. And then you can get back to your stuff. Sorry. I'll try sharing. I'm sharing the tab and it's working, but it's not sharing the window. So you're not going to believe what Carney says here. I mean, Marty says this should scare the shit out of everyone.
And something that my government is going to do is to use all of the powers of the federal government, including the emergency powers of the federal government, to accelerate the major projects that we need in order to build this economy and take on the Americans.
Oh, it's so frustrating. Oh, yeah. Oh, now he's ready. Time to build. Time to build. Oh, axe the tax. Now he's getting rid of the carbon tax. He's going to push all this green. You know what he says? They're going to use the powers, the emergency powers of the government to build green energy projects and take on the Americans.
Ooh, that sounds fun. I think I was kind of hoping he would use the emergency powers to put a pipeline through Quebec.
No. It's only his version of clean energy, like probably building heat pumps that he's got money in or something. But
then Quebec's going to just quit. Yeah. Quebec's like got one foot out the door. Alberta's got one foot out the door.
It's going to be like connect the two, right? That's a good idea. That's a good strategy there, Darren. But they don't want us.
No, I don't want anything to do with Quebec. We were going out different doors. We're going out opposite doors.
Ever get in trouble for saying Quebec that way? Quebec?
Hey, man, our Quebec videos do the best.
We should do one.
We do them all the time. Like that when I cut out the Quebec segments for the YouTube channel, the A-List YouTube channel, they're always those ones, the last ones that all went sort of viral, or at least viral for us on a new fledgling YouTube channel. That's to do with Quebec being douchebags. And then the comments just start, because everything, you know what it is people love to comment on Quebec's douchebaggery. So then it like pumps the algo. Anyway, speaking of, where we go? Okay.
Do you hear the Quebec minister in the, or the Quebec premier? I think he was the premier in the States. They all went down to the States.
Yeah, he's down. I think they're all down there right now, aren't they?
And he was like, "Oh, we're not gonna look at the dairy." They're talking about the supply management and the dairy problems, and he's like, "We're not gonna get rid of the supply management."
No, they wouldn't want to do that because that's where all the dairy farmers are. Is there in Quebec. So I do want to make good on one of my predictions. I think I predicted this on the show a couple weeks ago. Maybe you can tell me if I'm misremembering or not. But Trump threatens tariffs of 100% on up to 100% on Canadian cars. Didn't I say 100% on Canadian cars were coming? Maybe even more?
I don't know if you said a percentage on the tariffs, but you said that the car industry is going to go down there.
U.S. President Donald Trump has added Canadian cars to his list of tariff threats, suggesting potential 50 to 100% tariffs on the industry. During a February 10th interview with Fox News, Trump said Canada stole the U.S. car industry and vowed to take it back. I mean, it's hard to, I don't know that we stole it. We sort of, you know, they gave it to us as much as, you know, they handed it over and we took it and the party's over. If we don't make a deal with Canada, we're going to put a big tariff on cars. He said it could be 50 or 100%. Because we don't want their cars. We want to make the cars in Detroit. Remember last week or the week before, we looked at literally how close to Detroit these cars are being made. In most cases, within 50 to 100 miles. Trump's proposed tariffs would turn over decades of agreements that have shaped the automotive trade between the two countries. The automotive industries of Canada and the United States have been closely linked since the 1965 Canada-United States Automotive Products Agreement, which removed tariffs on vehicles and parts traded between the two nations, which at that time was probably like innocent, you know? It's probably like we were sending some cars, you know, it's probably pretty innocent. It wasn't the mass, like Honda's going to put up a plant here instead of here because they can save 8%.
When was that again? 91, did you say, or no?
65, yeah. The agreement was replaced in 1994 by the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which expanded free trade to all sectors. NAFTA was subsidized. So that would have been Bill Clinton, right? Bill Clinton or George Bush? That would be Bill Clinton.
Bill, yeah, I think so.
Which expanded free trade to all sectors. NAFTA was he came in 92. So, which expanded free trade to all sectors. NAFTA was subsequently replaced by the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, the USMCA, during Trump's first term. The deal introduced stricter rules for the automotive sector, including higher requirements for the origin of vehicles and parts. The agreement is slotted for review in 2026. What agreements are getting broken then? Trump on February 10th and 11th announced a 25% tariff on all steel and aluminum imports from the United States without exceptions or exemptions. This move also revoked previous exemptions granted to Canada and other countries, which the administration said created loopholes that were exploited by China and others. Calling the move unacceptable, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said his government would work in the coming weeks to convince the Trump administration that the tariffs would harm both countries. Canada made several commitments in response to Trump's concerns about the influx of illegal drugs, and Trudeau told the NATO Parliamentary Assembly in Montreal last November that Canada is on a clear path to meeting NATO's defense spending target of 2%. Of gross domestic product GDP by 2032. I mean, that might be a respectable defense if you didn't just see the Canada Affairs stuff, the Global Affairs Canada, and how much money we're just literally pissing away, which I have a segment on I'd like to do before we run out of time.
Okay. Well, I mean, I want to talk about the tariffs a little bit because I've been asking, like people are asking me, you know, my opinion on it, just because they know I'm not looking at the mainstream stuff only, but we're following all these other things. And I mean, I'm like, I don't know about you, but I find it hard to be upset at Trump for this specific thing, because I feel like we should have been doing it as a country ourselves to make, like, we should have been a rich country already. It was destroyed. All these projects were canceled. Like, you know, we should be doing everything we can in Canada. So I understand why Trump wants to do this. Like, how can you be angry at him when we should have done it ourselves? You know what I mean?
Well, I just do it even simpler than that. I mean, it's kind of like this, and you can't say that it won't affect our stuff, because it will, because it changes supply chain.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. But arguably, Trump applying those tariffs should in a free market system make the things in Canada cheaper. Because Trump applying tariffs, that don't mean shit to me. I don't live in America. He's tied a tariff on people who are selling stuff in America that they can either then absorb or pass off to their customers. So, you know, if that's your market, that's a tough one. But as a Canadian, that, you know, that's a tough one if you're in that business. Now, whether or not the government should help that business out with my tax money is a different conversation. I don't agree with it, but it's a conversation that I'd be willing to, you know, it's an argument that I could understand, you know, that, hey, you know, that this guy now can't sell his, I mean, the perfect example is cars. We're not there yet, but that's a good example, because if, you know, Ontario can't sell their cars anymore, how do you offset that? But if anything, the thing with the steel and with the cars is it should make my shit cheaper. I'm in Canada. So if you can't export 300,000 cars to the States anymore, and all you really got to do is add some running lights and tweak some other things for the different safety requirements, then the auto market in Canada should be full cars. It should be cheap. It should be the demand. The oversupply should make it, oversupply should overdo the demand and should make cars super cheap. The same thing that we said last week on the show should be helping happening with milk and dairy. If they just didn't dump out all this milk, we'd be paying a third to a half of what we're paying for milk, for butter, for cheese. You know what? You can probably quantify that out. Chicken's another one we'd be paying about half for. And then, you know, what do those things multiply out for into the places that are using those things to bake what they're baking or make what they're making? I mean, you could just see a giant sector of things get cheaper, because it should. Now, it's not going to happen because, you know, I think what will happen is we'll have those companies lay people off probably or something like that, and then cut production. And then, oh, now they're going to figure out some way to charge me more for steel, when American steel should cost me the same amount of money right now. I'll use the steel as example here because it's something I deal with on a day-to-day basis. We're having this conversation today with the estimator, and he's bitching about it. I'm like, it doesn't affect us. It doesn't affect us. Our steel's the same fucking price, and we don't sell steel to the States, so we don't care. Doesn't matter.
Well, we did. I mean, when I was there and in Trump 1.0,
it was weird. Now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that would have felt, did that fall under it? Because it's not steel at that point. It's a manufactured good.
No, we didn't have to include, but I think what we ended up doing is just eating the cost, right? Like, we would have to charge them more, but...
So anyway, for my thing, because I'm not selling anything to the States, that was one time in the whole time of the history of my day job that we'd send stuff to the States. It did happen. But then for the most part, I buy my steel from Canada, and I do buy steel from the States. So, but that doesn't cost me anymore until my idiot government responds with tariffs for no good fucking reason other than to flex, you know, then... Because it's sort of different in some ways, because America kind of makes more of the steel than the stuff that we don't make, you know, that you have to get from the States.
Don't we get a huge percentage of our products from the States? I mean, 80%.
Steel's about 50-50. There's about the same back and forth on
steel. Yeah, but there's certain stuff we don't even make up here, I think.
Yeah, there's certain stuff we don't make. Like, there's certain sections and members that have to come out of the States for sure. So like I told him, hey, it doesn't cost us any more fucking money. And if anything, if it was an actual free market system, it would drive the Canadian steel prices down a lot. They would go down considerably, 20 or 30%. And we'd be able to get steel at cheaper. And American steel that we still did have to get from the States, we would get at the same fucking price we're paying now. Maybe cheaper eventually if they can somehow, if bringing that home can make their market drive the prices down, their free market, which seems to be opening up a little bit. So those tariffs should... If we don't do anything, I'm trying not to be too oblivious to the fact that if you're a steel worker in a, you know, it's different. I'm a manufacturer that works in the country, in the community, you know, I'm not shipping shit to the States. If you, that's a different thing. Should they have their hand out to the government? Should they have, you know, maybe not counted on? I mean, honestly, what are you going to do? I mean, it's 25%. You could pass 12 of that off to the customer and take 12 on. You know, it's not an ideal situation. I get it. Those people should be talking to the government directly, though. It shouldn't be a blanket sort of thing. You know, we shouldn't be talking about a blanket aid package during a tariff war when we have a couple key sectors that are about to be affected, some dramatically, like the car sector is about to be, you know, decimated in Ontario. And that's the one I've been saying forever now, is that's the one I think he's actually got his eyes on, and he's going to take his probably foot off our throats on everything else. And it's going to be the auto sector is the one, but it's also the one that we're obviously going to be the most protective of. You know, it's the biggest one. It's the biggest one. The biggest one is oil. The oil's not stopping. We all know the oil's not stopping. They need our oil. Our oil needs to get to the East Coast through them. You know, this, it's not stopping. So the oil's not stopping. That's the question. But the auto sector is going back to Detroit. I mean, we've all been watching how much of a ghost town Detroit has turned into over the last, you know, 40 years. And I think it's important that that Canada recognized its role in that, because that manufacturing, you know, a giant chunk of that came to Canada. The rest of it went to Mexico. Those are the two places. That's it. You know, people aren't shipping cars overseas. So they're getting made in Mexico. We're to the tune of about, I think, 350,000 a year we're shipping down south, and they're making them literally 50 miles up the road from Detroit. So I still think that's been the real prize the whole time. And military bases. I mean, he's going to quash us into letting them put out at a minimum military bases in the Arctic. They're going to take over patrolling that shit. And we're going to
either way, it's kicking us into gear. That's something that it's forcing our politicians to look, and whether this is all by design or not, who knows, but it's forcing them to start talking about energy and talking about building. And I mean, I don't trust any of our people to follow through with any of this stuff. I mean, but I think either way, weather this out. Yeah, go for it.
Because I mean, how much do you think it would cost to bail out the auto sector? If we could bail out the banks, we could bail out the auto sector. I don't know what a bailout looks like, though. You know, you can't just.
I don't think we should bail out anybody. I mean, we should start making cars for ourselves.
Well, the problem is there's just too many cars then. You know what? I think that's probably too many cars.
Yeah, we should stop importing cars. Like, I mean, I don't know. It just seems
how
like
we should do that. Whoa. We can't do that because we don't make any cars.
Well, then we should start making them. I mean, this is the whole point. This is the whole problem, right?
Design a car, start a Canadian car company.
Well, not, I mean.
We should do it. We should start, what do we call it? The Grazda. The Canada, what do we agree? The Canada Am.
Primaricar.
Primaricar. I mean, that might be the time to start a Canadian car company.
It would be like those simple Toyotas. Like it, I mean, it's going to have to pass all the bullshit emissions tests and stuff, but make it as simple and cheap as possible and as durable and long lasting as possible. Super cheap to fix. You know, the thing never breaks down. It's really good on gas. It's got a new style combustion engine, like super accurate, new style. I mean, I'm sure there's some new combustion engines that are.
Oh, yeah. Just awesome. Send us a couple $100 million and we'll figure it out. We got it. None of us know shit about making cars, but we'll figure it out. You send us enough money, we'll figure it out. So I'm trying to figure out if this CID PNSIA, Canada's Foreign Aid, Canada International Development Platform, if this is probably outside, is this be outside of Global Affairs Canada? So the dashboard below provides data analysis on Canada's international assistance. You can see it down here in 2002 at around $2.9 billion, and in 20, now it's up to $8.4 billion.
It was 6.9 in 2021, it looks like. Yeah, I was going to pull that up too.
So the developing countries, $2.5 billion for developing countries unspecified.
I mean, it's mind-boggling, great. But I'd love to know where it's at right now in 2024. Like, this was 2021 before, like, slush funds went nuts. So where's it at? Where's the growth at now on this, I wonder?
So I think this is outside of the Global Affairs Canada. International assistance spending. Canada's international assistance spending increased by 27% to $8.4 billion in 2021.
Somebody here is saying it is through Global Affairs.
Somebody where?
On X, like the I had this thing too, and it said, according to the Canadian International Development Platform, the CIDP, the total sum of Canadians' foreign aid through Global Affairs in 2021 was $6.971 billion. I wonder how that compares to America's $50 billion. If you like compare it to GDP, it's probably a bigger percentage of our tax.
$8.4 billion, man. I mean,
what year is that? What year is that?
2021.
Huh.
So that's like 20% of the population. What's $50 billion is less. That's only a seventh of the U.S. population.
Yeah.
That's not the right math formula, but it's a good enough to know it's more.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I could be done anytime probably. I have this thing on microplastics.
Well, here's the new fentanyl czar. Just while we should have done it the other segment, but this is him. He apparently, this is from Graham, so who knows on Twitter, but collaborated with WEF on a digital ID initiative. It's from Rebel News. The Known Traveler Digital Identity Project was a digital credential system designed for international travelers. It never launched despite a $150 million budget allocation over 5 years ago. Canada's new fentanyl czar. There he is, Kevin Brosseau. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to judge him too bad, right? I mean, he's thrilled to see the official launch of this. What's that?
I do.
You do what? You want to judge him?
I want to judge him.
Yeah. Here he is again. Eliminating drugs scourge is the priority. So you go to the National Post and it's got, this is what he says. It's a priority. Kevin Brosseau says he is committed to reducing the amount of fentanyl heading south to the U.S. Getting the number to zero is in fact the goal.
Ba-da-ba.
Well, hopefully. I mean, I think he's been in the political landscape for a while, so hopefully he knows how to navigate it.
I would bet you money that he does not. This is a total flop.
You think they shut down that lab? That super lab?
Who, this guy?
No, I mean, whoever found it. I mean, that guy said, like, he made a point to say that they just, what did he say again? Not like they busted it, but they
stumbled upon it.
No, I don't think that was the word, but well, I mean, do you want to, I do have something on Canada's media bailouts and from how many billions went to the media. I think some of it through Global Affairs, if you want me to go through that quickly.
Sure.
It's pretty gross. I mean, I was going to save it for next week because it's not necessarily timely, but so this is from Melanie in Saskatchewan, my new province. You won't believe this. Trudeau's government has flushed over how many billions, Darren, down the drain on media bailouts since 2016? How many thousand million do you think?
7 billion.
18 billion. 18,000 million.
That's a big number.
18,000 million. That is a big number. Hey, Canada, since Trudeau took office, your hard-earned tax dollars have been tossed into an $18 billion pit for media bailouts and subsidies. Yes, I'm serious. Here's how your money was being spent. CBC funding, total $11.7 billion over the last 9 years. Annual, that's about $1.3 billion. Other media companies, annual subsidies are over $5.4 billion handed out to various media outlets every single year. Bailout packages, first wave of spending was $600 million. Spread over 5 years. More cash, another $129 million over the next 5 years. Extra help, $177 million over the years 2023 to 2025. Now let's talk about who got what. Post Media, they scored $10.8 million. CEWS, which is Canada's CERB for businesses, another $40 million to keep the lights on during COVID. Quebec's contribution, an extra $1 million from Quebec. What Post Media did, they closed local papers, laid off 70 people, and still made a cool $52.8 million in profit. You got to be shitting me. Look at the reported profits post-media from 2020 to 2024. $74 million, $72 million, $6.3 million, $72 million, $49 million. That's interesting. Black Press, for example, got a tiny $1,271 from a special fund. They also grabbed $5,000 from an emergency fund. The Walrus and McLean's got $10 million. The Logic, they took the wage subsidy and some tax credits while everyone else was doing it. Daily Hive benefited from emergency funds, but exact numbers, who knows? And then CBC Radio Canada, they've got a bunch here, $1.3 billion, $1.2 billion going on every year. And then smaller outlets, even the little guys got some help, like the Chatham Voice, which wanted funding for a local reporter. This isn't just spending, it's an outrage. Does this money buy influence over what we read and watch? How can it not? Where's the line between government and media these days? Sources, Canada Land on media funding, National Post on media bailout, the Globe and Mail on media support, and Wikipedia on Canada Media Fund. So thanks, Trudeau. I asked if that included the 25% tax credit for journals, and apparently it does. Hey, look, there's Carney, Trudeau, and who's that? Xi Jinping in the tub together?
Yeah, you understand it's not a real picture, though, right?
I do, yeah.
Okay. I assumed you did. I just wanted to make sure. You're a bit of a fuddy-duddy sometimes. So. Wow. That was a good episode, I think.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Let us know what you think. Graham at GrahamAmerica.com. If you loved it, do you hate it? What do you want us to cover? Because we do another episode of this next. We do an
It's not live streamed, but
we do a plus app. For plus members that you get if you sign up for plus over at GrahamAmericaOutlaw.ca. And if you are a plus member and you want us to do a deep dive or something, or you think there's something we should be covering, you should just email Graham and we will dig into it on that show. Because you guys, you know, you produce it, you make it, or you pay for it. If you guys weren't paying to produce the show, it would stop happening almost immediately. So GrahamAmericaOutlaw.ca, join those ranks today. Help make the show greater. Make GrahamAmerica great again. There you have it. Sign up right there, and we'd love you for it. Also, check out the GrahamAmerica Show. It's our other podcast, approaching 700 episodes, GrahamAmerica.ca. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. We got some good ones coming up. GrahamAmericaCBD.com for, CBDs and THC tinctures, stuff like that. The Shroom website is back up at GrahamAmerica.ca/shrooms. I think that's it. We also publish your book. If you want, you got a book in you, we'll help you get it out. And we have tons of audiobooks. I haven't fixed that art yet. Check out adultbrain.ca for that. You can buy books, publish your books, find our audiobooks, get paperbacks, ebooks, whatever you want. Check it all out. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, the
Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you. What the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.